Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. Until a few decades ago, the line between what was rural and what was urban in South Dakota was pretty clear. But since then, that line has gotten fuzzier as larger communities grow beyond their historical boundaries and more people outside the ag industry are moving into the country. The distinction matters, though, to policymakers who need to rely on census data when setting their priorities for the future. SDPB producer Brian Gevick joins us now with today's Images of the Past segment and a look at how the meaning of rural affects not just policy, but perception. Brian Gevick, welcome back to In the Moment.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm really interested in this one. Images of the Past is usually more focused on a hidden bit of history, but this topic is very relevant to us today. What made you take up this connection?
Well, you know, I've been working on a project about how people in rural South Dakota have historically stayed connected with one another and with the world. And what I've learned is that not really very much has changed over time. There's always been this need for information, whether it comes in by, you know, mail or local newspapers. And, you know, except for rural residents who really want to be living off the grid, there's always been this desire for access to the same kinds of technologies that people in larger communities enjoy. And getting that access has always been a slow process.
Huh. And, you know, for folks who consider maybe the choice of moving out into a more rural location, they might think, well, they're living there because they want to. They should know what they're getting into by living in the country. Is that a fair way to look at the situation?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually research on that. So I talked with an expert about that trade-off. Meredith Redland is a professor in the Department of Sociology and Rural Studies at South Dakota State.
You know, the one thing that I found in research I did quite some time ago that I found so interesting was not what the things people liked best about rural. The things that I found people expressed most commonly were the compromises that they felt were worth it. And by that, I mean, they were like, well, yeah, I'm a half hour to an hour away from a hospital. Hope something doesn't happen, but it's still worth it to me, right? Still worth it to me to be here. Or, there's only this many kids in the school. Well, maybe it'll cost us a little more to keep that school going, right? So that the idea of what makes it worth it isn't just scenery, et cetera. It's also these ways of looking at the other things you need in life and what those priorities are. I look at a lot of the work that I do is in the sense of placemaking and place identity. And I think that more and more we have kind of even rural people have a stereotypical idea of what's rural. Right? That in some ways, when we're looking at our own communities or even looking at our own social networks, we forget how unique we are so that we have that sense of place for that place that we may be in. So I guess I would, I feel like it's important for rural communities that thrive rather than just persist, right? Rural communities that thrive challenge their own stereotypes of what a rural community is.
Huh. This idea of what's worth it and identity. Brian, most of us think about, you know, the layout of communities just sort of happen. How important is it for communities to really say to themselves, this is who we are?
Well, I think historically it probably happened whether, you know, that identity happened, whether it was intentional or not. You have to think about the settlement days and you got various groups of immigrants living close to one another and various religious groups living close to one another. And sure, you know, they're doing business together, but they're also hanging on to their cultural identity. I talked with Mary Emery about that. She's the chair of the Department of Sociology and Rural Studies at SDSU. And what she told me is that they generally did make things work with one important exception.
You go back to these communities to look at when were there opportunities for those communities to collaborate across ethnicity and religion, and when did those differences make it difficult for them to cooperate. In every set of communities, you have a narrative about how difference has made a difference. And in every community, you also have a narrative about how working together has made a difference. So as social scientists, we want to sort that out, but we also want to make sure that people understand that both those narratives exist. The race issue is a much different issue in South Dakota because so much of the Indian land was opened under the Homesteading Act, and those Native families pushed off their land for settlement by Europeans.
If you're just joining us, we're talking today about the changing nature of rural South Dakota with SDPB's Brian Gevick. Brian, most people, especially rural folks, are aware of this idea of the population drain from rural areas in the state. What do we know about that trend?
Well, you know, oddly, it's been going on since something like 1917. It really sort of accelerated in the 1970s. But South Dakota's population overall is actually growing, and it's going to grow a little bit more, especially on Native American reservations. Right now, actually, about half of all South Dakotans live in so-called rural areas, but only about 25% live on farms and ranches or in what you'd call an isolated area.
So tell us a little bit more about that growing Native American population.
Well, it has to do with some information provided me by Zhang Weiwei. She's the state demographer, and you know she is looking in very fine detail at a very local level on things like population growth just due to more babies being born. And as it turns out, Native American reservations tend at this point to have a somewhat higher birth rate. So with more people moving out of other parts of the state and potentially more children being born on reservations, you can see where that shift would come in.
So tell us then about what are we calling rural areas as opposed to kind of that urban-rural line?
That is a really complicated question, and I found that out when I talked to our state demographer. And, you know, some communities seem to be urban or at least not rural, but in terms of policy and politics, they are. I want to turn to Mary Emery again, the chair of the Department of Sociology and Rural Studies at SDSU. She offers the city of Brookings as an example. She explains why that matters.
I think rural is a lot perception. So if you said to somebody in Brookings, you live in a rural community, they would say, oh, no, I don't. We've got multiple healthcare systems. We've got two grocery stores. We've got a bunch of things. We're not rural. Rural is something else. So you think about rural in terms of what are the resources that are available to people and how do you access them? And the definition that a lot of people have been using is rural is someplace where there's no McDonald's. And if I'm a small enough community that I don't have a McDonald's, then that means I'm going to have to depend on my neighbors a lot more for those kind of services that are more available, even in Brookings. So I think that it's an important point to think about rural in terms of how we think about what it's like to live in a rural area compared to other rural areas, what the resources are. The other thing I think is really important, a couple of colleagues of mine say, you know, if you've been to a big city, you've been to a big city. Downtowns look alike. They have their special things about them, but downtown Minneapolis is not a lot different than downtown Kansas City. Rural communities, however, are really different. Sisseton is not at all like Lead or Deadwood. Hot Springs is not at all like Wagner. So there's this great variety in rural that means that the richest community in the state is a rural community, but also the poorest communities in the state are rural communities. Federal funding also depends on your designation. So Brookings is rural according to the feds. So we recently got a really large health-related grant targeted to rural areas, looking at Brookings and some other areas. So policymakers need to think about what kinds of resources flow to what kinds of areas, depending on population. But I think policymakers also need to look at that demographic data Weiwei was talking about in terms of when you have communities where the fastest growing population segment are people over 65, you have different kinds of needs, and you have you need policymakers to pay attention to access to healthcare, those kinds of things, in a different way than if you have a community with the traditional population pyramid. So those kinds of elements are really important. I think what is really important for policymakers to pay attention to in South Dakota is the in-migration, out-migration. There's a lot of discussion about South Dakota is one of those states with the brain drain. So you get your education, you don't see any jobs in South Dakota, you go someplace else. But we have counties where we're seeing the brain gain. So we're seeing people coming back into South Dakota. Maybe instead of being an accountant at 3M, they decide to set up their small business as an accountant in Fountain or something like that. So what can we learn from that data that will help us create communities that are economically and socially prosperous? And the migration data can tell us a lot about what kind of policies and resources we need to invest in building those kind of communities. And for one example of that really is the housing crisis in rural South Dakota. The housing crisis really across the country, but it's more extreme in rural areas for a number of reasons. What are the resources policymakers can make available? What are the incentives they can make available to support affordable housing in rural communities? So if those people want to go someplace and get a degree and then come back and start their accounting business, there's housing for them and their family.
About the meaning of rural in South Dakota, what it means for policy and perception as part of our Images of the Past segment brought to us by SDPB's Brian Gebbick. Brian, thanks for joining us today. Good stuff.
Thanks so much, Jackie.